It's episode whatever of Dead FM. Don Early is madly glued to the computer as the Gamers Darkness Rising Blu-ray Kickstarter comes to a close, and I've been thrown under the bus to try and get this episode out the door. On the show today, an interview with Sean K. Reynolds, romance revealing and sexual healing, a word from the law offices of Pilfer, Swindle, and Jones, and now it's the news. The Blu-ray Kickstarter is coming to a close, and it has been far more successful than we could have ever imagined. By the time this episode launches, we will have raised more than $104,000 and almost 2,000 backers, if not more. The recording of the brand new commentaries are in full swing. We have the new short in production, and this is going to be one hell of a Blu-ray. You guys are amazing. The Demon Hunters RPG is in the final editing and art stages. Next in the process, we'll be delivering everything to layout, and so far, we are on schedule to have books at Gen Con. Speaking of Gen Con, we're in full Gen Con prep mode. Don is running 6 or more Demon Hunters RPG sessions over the weekend, and they are all sold out. We're going to have a lot of new and exciting merch this year, and we are also going to be looking for partnerships to maybe do a miniatures Kickstarter. In new show news, Gamers the Series and Demon Hunters Red Tape are back in full development mode. We do not have a specific timeline for anything yet, but Gamers the Series will probably launch first. And if we can launch the fundraising this year, that means we can produce it this year. That being said, we don't know if we're going to start with one episode and build from there, or try and produce the whole season at once, but both shows remain DG's top priority for new productions. After we get everything ready for Gen Con, the next major project we're devoting our efforts to is the new online DG store. Now the goal is to have that up by Gen Con, and we might be thinking too lofty there, but we're still going to try and shoot to have it online by then, where you can witness the firepower of our fully armed and operational battle station. our online store. And in keeping with the Dead.fm branding, the new store will be called Dead.market. And that's the news.
So our guest today is Sean K. Reynolds, game designer, and with all the buzz of the Gamers Darkness Rising we've been having right now, you'll recognize Sean as playing the Inquisitor, or random creepy knife guy. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Don.
So what was it like? I'm going to go back to just the movie for a second, because we just finished recording the villain's commentary for that. And tell me how you sort of came across the movie and like getting involved with that.
Well, I had watched the first Gamers movie. Actually, I used Monty Cook's copy when I was house sitting for him when he was out of town, and ended up watching the first Gamers movie and loved it. And then I ran into you guys, I think the Gen Con after that, when you were planning on making Darkness Rising. Mm. And when I heard that you had been recruiting people from the game industry like Jeff Grubb and Ed Stark and Monty Cook to have bit parts in the movie, I begged and pleaded that I could get a spot in because I'm a big old ham, and you guys found a spot for me that I could play the Inquisitor.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun too, and I kind of remember that even on just bumping into you on the plane ride home, I think.
Yeah, you had a script ready, and like after I had griped that I wanted to be in the movie, like I was sitting there in my seat, and you come creeping up next to me all hunched over and be like, here, read this section of the script. And I was talking about what the Inquisitor was doing. It's like, would you want to play that guy? He's like this evil Inquisitor. I'm like, okay, I'll do that, sure. So it was low commitment and a lot of fun, and it was great.
Yeah, so you were barefoot for most of your scenes, is that right?
Yeah, it's because we were, I had that red robe on, and I thought it'd be weird if you could see that I was wearing like tennis shoes, and just because I walked around enough and we didn't have any boots that would fit me. I'm like, you know what? I'm like a sun worshiper sort of character, so I'll just take my shoes off and walk around in the grass, no big deal. I didn't see too many snakes, so I didn't have to worry about that.
Right on. Yeah. It was that was a pretty cool set that we got to be on there.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't a set. It was that guy's house.
It was that guy's house, a lot of I just assume everybody knows who you are, but they may not know specifically. So why don't you take us a little bit back to like TSR, and like tell us, give us a little bit of a recap of like your career as a game designer.
Well, the short form is that I started at TSR as the online coordinator, which is their fancy title for webmaster, and I was responsible for their online presence and handling things like news groups and the America Online Forum, mm-hmm. and enforcing TSR's very draconian copyright policy, which I basically didn't do because I thought the policy was ridiculous, and I worked with another staff member and the staff lawyer to get that policy changed into something that would actually let you create fan materials and post them and share them with people. Because at the time, TSR's official policy was, if you stat it out in D&D terms, TSR owns it, which is kind of crazy. And then when Wizards of the Coast bought TSR and moved much of the employees out, I was one of those, and I joined the web team, but I realized that I had other things that I wanted to do, and I heard about a design position opening up, and I applied and got that, and I started working on Team Greyhawk in the late second edition era, mm-hmm. and then Forgotten Realms in the late second edition era, and then we made third edition, and I was on the core team for Forgotten Realms, working on the Forgotten Realms campaign setting, worked a bit on Alternity, and then I left Wizards of the Coast to go work at Interplay on a couple of different video games, mm-hmm. and then I ended up moving to another section of California and worked on some things like the World of Warcraft trading card game and the Pirates of the Caribbean trading card game.
Oh, okay.
And Avatar The Last Airbender trading card game. And then I ended up at Paizo for 6 years as a developer and then as a designer for the Pathfinder RPG.
Right.
And then last year I left Paizo to strike out and do my own thing, and I had a Kickstarter to do my own game, which is called the Five Moons RPG, which I'm trying to wrap up the playtest document so I can get that out to the playtesters ASAP. And now I'm back working at Wizards of the Coast, being a lore guy and helping wrangle data for when they want to have, for example, if a video game company wants to make a video game set in Waterdeep, they need to know what books they need to read and what documentation they need to have, and I'm going to be the guy who's putting all that together so that they don't have to read 30 years of back products to make a Waterdeep game. They can just focus on the current content.
Nice. That sounds efficient.
Yes. And since I wrote half of those books, then you know there's a good chance I know what sort of stuff they need to read and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah. So, tell me a little bit about the Five Moons. I mean, you've been talking about a lot and writing a ton and kind of following your blog. What inspired you to create this game? What was the key thing that drove you to that?
Mainly it's because after working on Pathfinder for 6 years and working on various iterations of D&D for the past decade before that, I was tired of really rules-heavy systems that have everything spelled out. And like I wrote the beginner box for Pathfinder, and that was taking the Pathfinder RPG and scaling it down into something that was much simpler, mm-hmm. intended for a younger audience and something that didn't really read like a textbook or mm-hmm. a legal book. I wanted it to read like something that like was a conversation with a player that anybody could just pick up. And that really informed a lot of the decisions I wanted to make about the Five Moons RPG and how the game could play and how aspects of the rules would be. And so it's a much simpler game experience. There's a lot less math and statuses to track. And I just wanted to make it a game that you could kind of hark back to first edition D&D or even basic D&D, where you don't have to have a rule for everything, and you can just accept that the GM is going to make a decision about something and you just roll with that and focus on the fun and the role playing rather than the, oh, I get a +2 from this and a +1 from that.
Okay, cool. You know, it seems like a lot of game developers that have been around for a long time are sort of moving that direction in creating games that are simpler, less rule heavy, that sort of thing. Do you think that that has some validity? Do you think there's a sort of a movement across?
There definitely is. And I think the gaming functions in a cycle. It's like you start out with a simple game and then people want more and more details. They want a tax opportunity. They want a better skill system. They want to be able to build castles. And so you start layering on all these other mechanics until eventually the game is just so full of data. You have, like in Pathfinder and then third edition D&D, you ended up with, you know, books and books of spells and feats and magic items, and it's really easy to be able to create a character that's really powerful if you know what you're doing, but that means if you don't know what you're doing, your character is weak by comparison, and you feel kind of sad. So a lot of game designers kind of want to take a step away from that, and whether they're doing it as an indie game or whether it's something like 4th or 5th edition D&D, where they're like, you know, we can just pare this down. Mm-hmm. We don't need to keep adding all these features, and just get back to the functionality of, hey, this is what my character wants to do. Mm-hmm. Can I do it? And the GM could say, yes, you can make a roll, or mm-hmm. no, that's impossible.
Right.
And just kind of really reestablishes a level of trust between the players and the GM. Because for 3rd edition, the goal was that by spelling out all the DCs of climb checks and jump checks and everything like that, it was to take a lot of the responsibility for the GM away from the GM, so the GM could focus on the story mm-hmm. and the encounters, and the players would know that if they want to jump a 15-foot pit, this is the number they need to get.
Right.
What ended up happening is that the players kind of took all that power and said, this pit is 15 feet across, so I know what the DC is supposed to be.
Right.
And so when you told me it's DC 20, no, I know it's only DC 10 or DC 15.
Yeah.
And the GM kind of was robbed of some power to say, well, you don't exactly know what's going on. Like, under normal circumstances, you can jump that pit, but maybe there's like a high gravity effect here, or it's mm-hmm. a little bit slippery or whatever. So I get to decide whether this is plus or minus 5. Mm-hmm. And you have to understand that I'm not doing this because I'm your adversary. I'm doing it because I want to make an interesting encounter and an interesting story and an interesting campaign. And so by taking away a lot of those nitpicking details and mm-hmm. just saying, GM, you're going to have to be able to make rulings. We expect you to be a reasonable person, a smart person who understands the game and understands that the goal is for everybody to have fun.
Yeah.
And so by focusing on that and not on requiring you have to look up page 75 on rulebook number 3, it really kind of brings the focus back to the fun and the entertainment rather than the number crunching.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I feel like that's also representative of my own preferences as I've been gaming. You know, I started gaming in late 2nd edition mm-hmm. and moved right along into your work in 3rd edition and loved Greyhawk, loved Forgotten Realms especially, and that my very first character I ever made was a specialty cleric in 2nd edition to the god Kelimvor.
Okay.
His name was Mort Kemnon.
Ah, that's familiar.
Yes, yes. And so that ended up making it into the movie. But I really liked that sort of setting and somebody coming completely brand new to gaming and whatever. It was very interesting. But it did. It ended up being this almost like a math war.
Yes.
You know, and it was very interesting. And in college, we had the time.
Yes.
To build these math intensive characters and encounters and campaigns and whatnot. In fact, probably my favorite campaigns still to this day is this epic level now 3.5. It started in 2nd edition. It didn't start an epic level, but the math is just insane at this level at this point.
You see a lot on the message boards and other forums where people are talking about building characters, and it really seems like they spend more time building their character and dissecting how to get the maximized bonus for something than they do actually playing the character. Which is like, okay, well, if that's what you want to do, that's fine, but that's mm-hmm. not the sort of game that I want to write or run, and so that's why I'm off doing my own thing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and I think that, having some familiarity with and sort of preference, like, I'm in my late 30s. I still want a game. I don't have time to spend 5 hours on a second level character.
Yeah.
I want to build a character. I want to get into the game. And really excited to play Five Moons. Tell me about the setting and the name. How did that come about?
Well, we were talking about just kind of jokesy surnames because the number 5 comes up a lot, and like, you have 5 ability scores and there are 5 armor slots, and if you're a fighter, you get +5 on your attack rolls with weapons and that sort of thing. And so we were thinking about calling it like the Rule of 5 RPG, and then it was kind of like, what about the +5 RPG, because +5 is a big thing. But both of those had enough of a precedent in some other genre. They're like, let's not be cutesy. And then decided that the kind of the campaign setting that I was thinking of was this weird post-Earth, not in a post-apocalyptic sort of way, but in that the people from Earth were taken from there to this other world, just a collection mm-hmm. of people, and were planted and said, okay, you're going to colonize this place, and they don't know who did it. And so this, it's just this alternate, you don't know if it's another dimension or if it's another planet or whatever.
Right.
And people's DNA had been tinkered with, and so you have elves and dwarves, but they're actually still like 99% human, and you can go to a person who has the natural ability to manipulate DNA. It's like, I want to have elf eyes, I want to have elf ears, and you can get that, and you can push it really far and be like, I want to have cat eyes, or I want to be something very much like a werewolf. And so the idea that your race is very fluid, and that all the non-human races that you see in this world are actually human people or derived from human stock. And so it brings up a lot of questions of, okay, we're going to go wipe out this village of orcs, but we could technically be orcs with just a couple hours of DNA shaping work. So it brings up weird questions of racism and what it is to be human and that sort of thing. So yeah, that's kind of where I was pushing that to go. But at the same time, you could just play it as a standard fantasy campaign. But it's a weird sort of geography. It's a flat world with a lot of islands floating in an ocean, which is above this kind of weird ethereal ocean where these gigantic dragons live. And the light, because it's not a standard Earth sort of stellar system, like the light comes from one of these gigantic five moons that orbits above this plane of islands and stuff. And that light source is actually a gigantic spider that's like hundreds of miles across.
Wow.
And there are these four other giant celestial bodies that are also orbiting like this, and they are basically the divinities of this setting, and you can actually see them. So like, there's this one moon that's called the Lafriche moon, and it has this gigantic lynx creature walking around on it, and that creature is Lafriche, and so you can actually worship Lafriche. And if you're a mortal and you are a devout Lafriche worshiper, like a lot of these people use their shaper magic to like make themselves look more lynx-like. And some of them, you can have different cults that are like, no, you're not lynx enough, so you're not worthy. And having come from a background of Pathfinder, one of the things that I wanted to do is that if you look at archetypes, they're a way for you to customize your character class. Like, oh, you know what? I want to be a kind of paladin-ish fighter or a more paladin-ish cleric. But you can't use one archetype to do that, because if you apply it to a fighter, you need to swap out different things than what you would swap out with a cleric. And instead, what we're doing is I just have five very simple classes. Again, there's the number five. And anybody can learn any ability they want. So if you want to learn how to heal people and you're a fighter, you just learn how to heal people. If you want to be a wizard, you want to learn power attack or the equivalent power attack, you just learn it. And so you can just unlearn, or you can learn an unlimited number of things, but it's kind of like how a wizard can know unlimited numbers of spells. You can only prepare a certain number at a time. And so if you're the fighter, you're like, okay, today I'm going to practice my morning exercises. I'm going to do power attack. I'm going to do cleave, but I'm also going to learn or practice my skill focus stealth and my cure light wounds and my detect invisibility spell. And so you can do just whatever you want by that sort of way. And you can interface with the racial abilities as well and say, hey, I want to be kind of like a half dragon sort of character.
Cool.
So I'm going to tweak my DNA to give myself scaly skin. And if you want to have a breath weapon like a dragon, then you just learn the Burning Hand spell. But it's not really a spell. You just say, oh, it's just a breath weapon for me. My fire spell is my breath weapon.
Yeah.
And so the goal is just to be able to customize your character in just about any way you want without having to go and say, well, you need this book and that book. You need to tweak this one thing. It's just like, no, you know what? Just let it play.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Well, thanks for joining. And it's been awesome to be able to hang out with you for an afternoon. And we're gonna have a lot of fun at Gen Con.
Yes.
And I look forward to my copy of Five Moons when it's out.
Thanks, Don.
And yeah, so this is Dead FM. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Hello, you're listening to Dead FM. I'm Nathan Rice, and I'm sure what you're about to listen to is almost as awesome as me.
And this month, as always, we have a bunch of questions from Matthew Hunt. Thank you, Matthew. I'm not quite sure when all of these were penned, but Don sent them all over to me at once. So, question one, any more audio Kentucky Blue Clay stories on the horizon? Tiff?
Well, Scott, I'm glad you asked. Because I think that on a remote control, instead of rewind and fast forward, we should have left and right. It gives me an L and an R. So whenever you're like, hey, go back, I'll be like, okay. And so then I push the left button, and that rewinds it, and I push the right button to fast forward. So it's as simple as that, really.
Excellent. All right, next question. Will Story Time with KBC and Truth to the Head be returning regularly or on an ad hoc basis till the comic returns later this year? Tiff?
I think that on a remote control, instead of rewind and fast forward, we should have left and right. And it gives me an L and an R. So whenever you're like, hey, go back, I'll be like, okay. And so then I push the left button and that rewinds it. And I push the right button to fast forward. So it's as simple as that, really.
What are your thoughts on Avengers Age of Ultron?
I think Kix is the best serial, Scott. It's fabulous. And I also love James Spader.
I like Kix as well. It's just a fun party time in your mouth.
So is James Spader.
That's what I heard. Anything on TV that you're enjoying at the moment? I'm enjoying the mold growing on my rabbit ear antennas.
Ah, yes. Yes, I don't watch that anymore. It's a bit dated.
It is.
I like things in color.
Oh, this has color. In fact, it's more than just green now.
Whoa. You're telling me that they're streaming mold now? Because yep. If they're streaming, I am on board. Sold.
Brilliant. Hey, any book recommendations?
I would suggest The Dictionary.
Good.
It's very important.
All the words are in there.
It helps make the words that come together to the words that make the sentences.
Mm-hmm.
I also enjoy a thesaurus because it is not a dictionary, but a thesaurus.
It's an ancient dinosaur.
That's right. You know, and they have milk. Dinosaurs make milk. It's acidophilus. Look it up in the dictionary. Dinosaur milk in the grocery store.
Brilliant. Mm-hmm. And that's all with the questions and answers for this episode of Dead FM. Thanks, Tiff.
It's Montpelier. That's the capital, Montpelier.
Oh, dear God. It's Dead FM.
Do you own a business and have recently been asked to make a cake, pie, pizza, or some other form of food medley baked in an oven by a couple of non-straight people? Then call the law offices of Pilfer, Swindle, and Jones. Following the great state of Indiana's lead, our firm specializes in representing clients that have felt forced against their will to take currency for goods and services by the folk of the non-hetero variety. We believe that if you are an American business owner, you should have the freedom to deny the rights of others who make you feel icky. We have, of course, put this practice into our own building by installing a shame door that we silently point to until the undesirable has left the premises. Right now, you're probably fretting over all these changes that are going on throughout the nation under the banner of equality. We understand. Change is bad. You also may be thinking, what do I tell my kids? Friend, we're right there with you. Have you seen my children? They're terrible. I like to avoid speaking to them directly whenever I have the ability to do so. Any dodge of a conversation deeper than past the salt with those little monsters is a win in my book. Look, we all know that God hates the gays. It says so right there in the old part of that book that was written thousands of years ago. But how do you bring that sweet religious hate into the light of modern-day justice? By calling the law offices of Pilfer, Swindle, and Jones right now. We fight for your freedom to legally remind others that you are better than them. After all, what's the fun of being straight if you can't have the stuff that others can't?
Before, by the law offices of Pilfer, Swindle, and Jones. We also handle for-profit companies' rights to refuse birth control and benefits packages, to give donations to anti-LGBT organizations, and to pretty much allow any other goddamn thing rich straight people want to do with their money.
Call now.
This message brought to you by Nathan Rice. Not paid by him. Not by... Fuck!
Good evening. Tonight there will be a change in our regularly scheduled programming. If you've tuned in for Romance Revealing and Sexual Healing with Dr. Phyllis and Nurse Gary, they won't be joining us tonight. They'll be back on the air next week as usual, but tonight we have a special treat for all you listeners. Filling in is our Sunday morning show, Much Ado About Stuffing with Gladys and Ethel. They'll be answering all your culinary questions. Callers, the number is the same as always, 555-314-1592. Now, without further ado, it's Much Ado About Stuffing.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Much Ado About Stuffing. I'm Ethel.
And I'm Gladys.
I must say, this is a real treat. Our Sunday show is usually just us chit-chatting away about recipes. Now we get to interact with the listeners. What a treat.
Oh, Ethel, stop it with the treat talk. You're making me hungry already. I'm not usually up this late.
Well, except when you're sneaking into the fridge for midnight snack. You cheesemonger.
Oh, Ethel, you know I'm all about Burgess. Spelt Burgess, no cheddar.
Oh, my stars, Gladys. You smart aleck. I bet you graduated Pie Baker Kappa.
Ethel, you punster. Boy, folks, when you put two cooks in the kitchen, the heat is on. We are going to have some fun tonight. We are so excited to answer your culinary questions. And, oh, it looks like we have our first caller.
Where? I don't see... Oh.
Go ahead, caller. You are live on the air.
Hello? Am I on the air?
You bet your boots. What's your name, dear?
It's Aberforth. Aberforth Rasputin. That's not my real name, though.
I must admit, I did suspect that. Next time, go with a Dave or a Tom.
Or even Todd or Deshaun.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mr. Rasputin.
You can call me by my first name.
Do you mean your fake first name, or...
Yes, the fake one.
Well, Mr. Aberforth, what can we help you with?
Well, first off, it's important that you know I'm a meat and potatoes kind of guy. Secondly, fate helped me find someone special. It's hard to believe, but the Zodiac tattoo on her lower back matches the Zodiac tattoo on my neck. And we got him before we ever met. A perfect pair of Capricorns with a passion for monster trucks. Whew. Well, she asked me out, and I said yes. We went out on 3 great dates to the drive-in through. That's a combo drive-in theater and drive-through fast food place. On the 4th date, we sat down to order, and she leaned in towards me and told me she had something to share with me. She confessed a lot of things, but the one that bothered me most was crabs. I mean, she's itching to get past this, but I don't know if I can.
That's a real humdinger.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm gonna need a little more information, Aberforth. I understand that you are a meat and potatoes man.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever eat anything exotic? Or is there something about crabs in particular that you find unappetizing?
There are many things about crabs I find unappetizing. The rash, for one.
You know, Ethel, this sounds like a classic crustacean allergy.
You said it, Gladys. It's such a shame.
What do you mean? Do crabs make you allergic to shellfish, too?
Aberforth, it sounds like you have met a special lady. And in a relationship, there has to be give and take. I say find a compromise. Meat and potatoes most of the time, but keep an open mind. For instance, on special occasions, crabs are okay. Try it, Aberforth. You never know. You just might like it.
Wait, what?
Oh, sorry, caller. Looks like we lost you there. But remember, folks, don't limit your palate. Clams, mm-hmm. tuna, mm-hmm. snapper.
Mm-hmm.
Give seafood a deep mm-hmm. exploration. Find some fun seafood recipes on our MySpace page.
Mm. And you know what? I challenge each and every one of you listeners to go out tomorrow and get yourself some crabs.
Imagine if you never tried pasta. That would cost your taste buds a pretty penny.
Oh, Ethel, your puns are so good. I hope you're getting paid a flowerly wage.
We're having too much fun. Okay, next caller.
Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah? I feel like I need bigger breasts.
Well, caller, have you been stuffing them?
Well, I plan on it. Are there risks to stuffing them?
As long as you remember to wash your hands mm-hmm. to avoid cross-contamination, yeah. it should be perfectly safe. What are you going to stuff them with?
I don't know. I was thinking, like, maybe socks or some tissue, but just at first.
Now, I wouldn't recommend socks or tissue for stuffing. Mm. It seems unsanitary and impractical.
Yeah, you know, Ethel, there are some strange stuffing traditions out there. You know, my mom used to take a whole one and stuff a beer can up inside. Oh. I mean, legs, thighs, breasts, and all. And then take the beer can and floop up in there and just put it right in the oven. And nowadays, people do it all the time, especially if they're camping or, you know, having a barbecue.
Oh, I agree, Gladys. Your breasts will look great and taste better if you try a simple ricotta mix and maybe some fresh basil for an aromatic effect.
Mm-hmm.
So you think I should stuff my breasts with cheese?
Absolutely.
Not always, you know. I mean, plain breasts are also fine. Juicy, tender breasts don't need fancy trappings. Frankly, caller, may I call you caller? Frankly, caller, it's your choice, and you should do whatever brings you joy. And thank you for your time.
Well, this has been just fab.
I know. We need to allow callers on our show. I mean, some of these listeners really need some culinary advice.
Okay, look, we have time for one more caller.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Chad.
Hiya there, Chad. What can we help you with this evening?
I was wondering if you knew a good recipe for a... for pickle bread?
Well, I believe it is called dill bread. I've never made it myself, but I'm sure we can post a recipe after the show. We can post it on our GeoCities webpage.
Oh, I really need a recipe right now. I mean,
Ethel. I love dill bread. My grandmother used to make it, and it's just so darn delicious. I couldn't wait until it came out of the oven. And one time, I got so impatient, I tried to eat the dough.
Wait, what? What is it you tried to eat?
The dough. I tried to eat the dough.
I know, but like, what dough?
The dill dough. I tried to eat the dill dough.
Now I know what Mediterranean food feels like because I feel awful.
You are just a freaking artist, you are. I love it. So, listeners, it has been fabulous chatting with you. Please join us on Much Ado About Stuffing on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m.
As always, take care of yourself.
With Aunt Adele's hot milk toddy.
One cup of milk.
A pinch of nutmeg.
One teaspoon of honey.
And a touch of scotch is never optional.
Thank you, Gladys and Ethel. We are now returning to our regularly scheduled programming segment titled Open Mic. Tonight, a local artisan plays a pan flute with his belly button, while a slam poet shouts idioms closely followed by a literal interpretation.
This episode of Dead FM is directed and engineered by Scott C. Brown. Contributors to this episode of Dead FM are Don Early, Tiffany Pike, Brian Lewis, Jennifer Reifenberry, Sean K. Reynolds, Nathan Rice, and Scott C. Brown. The Dead FM theme song, High Road, is written by Sean Bendixson. It's performed by the Bendixson Brothers and was arranged by Steve Walbrecht. Dead FM is copyright 2015 by Dead Gentleman Productions, LLC, all rights reserved. Don't forget to subscribe to Dead FM on iTunes, Stitcher, or however the hell else you get your podcasts. Climbing on the water plane, yes, I can't complain. I'm being up so low. Goodbye.